South Dakota Public Broadcasting, sdpb.org.
That we believe we're on the internet, and this is the regularly scheduled meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. It's February 10th at approximately 2:30 in the afternoon, and we're here in the State Capitol Building. My name is Dusty Johnson. My fellow commissioners, Steve Kolbeck and Dusty Johnson, are also here. We have a number of people on the phone line, a number of folks.
I represent that remark.
What's that?
I have an identity crisis, Mr.
Chairman. I have an identity crisis. Commissioner Kolbeck called me Dusty Johnson several times at the last commission meeting, and now you have referred to me as Dusty Johnson. So I am suffering greatly.
we can kind of excuse Steve, but for me to call you me is really a lapse of judgment, I suppose. Commissioners Steve Kolbeck and Gary Hansen. With that, we'll proceed to our agenda. The first item is an update from Ms. Gregg on consumer inquiries and contacts.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. The Commission has received a total of 129 contacts since the last report was prepared for the January 27, 2009 Commission meeting. 44 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 23 of the contacts involved electric services, 17 contacts involved natural gas service, 2 contacts involved gas and electric service, 9 contacts involved cell phone service, 11 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, and 1 contact involved wind energy, 6 contacts involved the Keystone Pipeline, and 16 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 230 of the 274 complaints received in 2009 have been resolved, and 2,505 of the 2,513 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved.
Questions for Ms. Gregg? I have one. 6 contacts for TransCanada, that's maybe a little bit higher than we've had in the recent past. A, is that correct? And if so, was there a commonality to the contacts?
One thing is, about a month or so ago, a letter was sent out by the commission asking consumers that if they did in that area have problems with Keystone, to send us a letter with specific information instead of just the generalities. That helps us pinpoint the problems and actually take a look at them. And so that generated some letters with some specific information that Ms. Stemler and I have been able to follow up on and assist the consumers.
Okay, thanks very much. Other questions? Seeing none, we'll move along to electric item number 1, which deals with a filing made by Otter Tail Corporation for authority to increase its electric rates. The questions before the commission today, however, are: first, shall it approve the proposed consulting contract? And secondly, shall it suspend the imposition of the tariff for an additional 60 days? We'll look towards staff for their comments.
Thank you, Chairman. These are the standard issues in a rate case proceeding, and we would just ask that the commission approve the consulting contract and or allow staff to enter into the consulting contract for ultimate commissioner's signature, and then approve the suspension for the tariff for an additional 60 days beyond February 28, 2009.
Thanks very much, Mr. Jacobson. Any comments from the applicant? Hearing none, questions, comments from commissioners or advisors?
I just have one.
Go ahead.
This consultant is the same we've used in the past.
That's correct.
With good results and affordable results?
Yes.
Mr. Jacobson, are the rates for this proposed contract similar to what they've done in the recent past? And then, secondly, were there estimates for time that would be spent on this docket? Are those in alignment with recent rate cases?
Yes. To your first question, I believe there may be a slight increase in the hourly rates proposed by the contractor. Regarding the total amount of the fee and the hours, there is a slight increase. There are some issues in this case that are a little more in-depth than normally, specifically rate design being one of them. It could end up being quite an issue depending on what happens down the road.
Presumably the applicant hasn't indicated any concern with the no, this contract?
The applicant contacted me immediately before the meeting and said they would not be, they would be listening on the web, but they would not be, didn't have any concerns. They would just be listening.
Thanks very much.
Mr. Jacobson, mm-hmm. In your opinion, are the fees that we're going to collect from the company assess against the company more than adequate to cover the cost of this contract and other expenses associated with the case?
Yes, in each case when we go into a contract like this, we try to stress that the consultant put down adequate funds for completion of his duties in the case.
With that, is there a motion on the first question for the commission regarding the proposed consulting contract?
I motion in EL08-030 that the commission approve the proposed consulting contract.
Motion has been made. No second is required. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Mr. Jacobson, any comments on the fairly routine additional extension?
No, we just do that in the best interest of the consumers.
Anyone else have any additional comments on that item? Okay. Commission action, and I would go ahead, Commissioner. You and I both reached at the same time.
So. I was reaching so I could vote aye, assuming that you were going to make the motion. I'll move that on EL08-030 that the commission suspend the imposition of the tariff for an additional 60 days beyond the February 28th, 2009.
Motion has been made. Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries. One wonders if we shouldn't take electric item number two last, if that's acceptable to the applicant. I think the rest of our agenda will move relatively swiftly. Telecom item number one does deal with the application by Native American Telecom for a COA. The question for the commission today is, shall it grant the motion to compel? We'll look first to staff to see if there are any recent developments.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff. The parties have asked that this matter be deferred for 2 weeks.
Thanks very much. Any comments from anybody else on that? Hearing none, I would move the commission defer action. We'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks. Telecom item number two is TC08-138. This is in the matter of the filing by Quest Corporation for approval of revisions to its access services tariff, and today shall the commission approve those revisions. Anyone from Quest on the line?
Thank you. This is Colleen Siebel from Quest Corporation. And I also have on the line Susan Hansen and Don Lewis, who are available for any questions that anyone may have. If there are no questions, we would just ask that you approve it.
Thanks very much. Staff, Ms. LaBrie-Baker, Ms. Kramer.
Thank you, Chairman. Staff has reviewed the filing. Quest has responded to all data requests. There were no interveners in this matter. Staff has no objections to the changes and would recommend that you approve the tariff changes or tariff sheets as filed.
Thank you, Ms. LaBrie-Baker. Any questions by commissioners or advisors?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Ms. Savold, is there any effect on other carriers, interconnecting carriers on this tariff?
I believe Mr. Lewis could answer that question.
No, there isn't. We just reroute, in essence, this traffic instead of going directly into switches that are located in South Dakota. We just route the traffic through switches that are in Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota to achieve efficiencies. But customers won't notice any difference whatsoever.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Hearing none, any discussion or action?
Mr. Chairman, I move that in TC08-138 that the Commission approve the revisions to the access service tariff.
Motion has been made. No second is required. Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Telecom item number three is the matter of the application of NetTalk.com Incorporated for a local exchange services COA. And today, shall the commission grant that COA? We'll pause to see if we have anyone from NetTalk on the line.
Yes, this is Nicholas Kyriakides calling from NetTalk.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Any comments in support of your filing?
No, since our filing, there has been some changes, two changes, and I don't know if you need to know of them at this point. One of them being our registered agent has changed address, and as well as we've been awarded other CLECs in the time that this application has been pending. And I don't know if you want me to list the extra ones or file that separately.
If you could file it separately, I think that would probably be most appropriate.
Okay.
But I'll just pause to see if anybody has a better suggestion. Okay. With that, we'll turn toward Mr. Thurber and Ms. Kramer for their comments.
Thank you, Chairman. This is John Thurber for staff. On December 5th, 2008, NetTalk.com Incorporated filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide local exchange services in South Dakota. The applicant has requested a waiver of Administrative Rule 2010-32-312, which is the requirement of providing the financial statements for the most recent 12-month period. The applicant has agreed that it will not offer prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, and will not accept or require deposits or advance payments without prior approval of the commission. The applicant has filed in accordance with our administrative rules. Staff would recommend granting the waiver of Administrative Rule 2010-32-312 and granting the certificate of authority with prepaid restrictions subject to rural safeguards.
Any questions? Hearing none, any comments or action? I would move that the commission grant a COA to NetTalk.com Incorporated with the waiver of the rule regarding financial statements, also with stipulation allowing no prepayment or deposits, and obviously in alignment with rural safeguards. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. With that, we will proceed to back to electric item number 2. This is a filing by Xcel Energy for a fuel clause adjustment recovery of MISO ASM net costs and revenue. There are two questions for the commission today. Perhaps most appropriately, they should be taken in reverse order. The second is, shall the commission approve revisions to the fuel clause tariff rider allowing the pass-through of those MISO ASM charges and revenues effective March 1st? And secondly, should the commission approve the deferral of MISO ASM charges and revenues from January 6, 2009 through February 28, 2009 with less than 30 days notice? This time we would look to the applicant for their comments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Jim Wilcox. I work for Xcel Energy in South Dakota. On the phone today with me is Jim Johnson. He's an attorney in Minneapolis. And in his office with him, and not listed with your on your list, is Ann Hoyer. She's available for questions as well. Then in Denver, we have a fellow named Mike Bogner, and Mike is going to provide us with a very brief presentation here to explain our petition, and then we'll proceed with questions. But, you know, in short, the company would just respectfully request approval. So, Mike, I just turn over to you and let you make your presentation.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Yeah, the ancillary service market that we're here talking about, the associated charge types, this new market started on January 6th of this year, 2009, and it's really just an extension of the existing energy market that MISO has been operating for approximately 3 years now, with the overall goal of further reducing the production cost or fuel cost associated with serving all the load in the footprint. There's been mention of six ancillary services in the past, I think, related to this filing. And just to briefly mention what those are, when we talk about ancillary services, the six products are Black Start service, voltage support, energy imbalance, regulation, spinning reserve, and supplemental reserve. And really all we're talking about here is the last three that I mentioned. So once again, that's regulation, spinning reserve, and supplemental reserve. The other three are still handled under some other kind of cost-based or tariff-based mechanism. But we now have a market, an energy market, that incorporates those last three ancillary service types or products. And briefly, just to describe what they are, all three of these relate to capacity, unloaded capacity that we all as utilities carry on our resources to respond to various contingencies or load following requirements on the energy grid. So this is capacity that we all have on generators that are available to respond to the energy needs of customers on a very rapid response basis to make sure that supply and demand are always balanced. And in as much as in the past, prior to January 6th, each utility has been responsible for carrying all of these ancillary services or figuring out which of its own resources to back down and make sure that this unloaded capacity is available. We now have a market that, to where MISO, the entity that runs the market, is now determining which units should carry these services and which units should instead produce energy. And once again, the goal of the market is to take another step in the evolution of a wholesale energy market that allows you to take advantage of the diversity of resources that are out there amongst all the members of MISO and drive down the overall production or fuel cost associated with serving all of the customer needs. With the ancillary service market, we now have anywhere from 12 to 14 new charge types, depending on how you look at them, that are part of the MISO bill. And that's really what we're here talking about today, is what to do with the costs and revenues that are incurred in those 14 charge types. And the request of the company is essentially to include those and match those with the existing charge types that have been on the MISO bill for the last 3 years for flow through in the FCA. And if there's any questions as to what those 14 charge types are, how they work, and how they relate to energy, I'd be happy to take those.
Mr. Chair, this is Jim Johnson in Minneapolis. And basically, with regards to the first question, what we proposed in our filing was a relatively simple, I think, two or three word addition to the fuel clause tariff page, which had previously referred to the MISO energy market, and simply inserted and ancillary services market to make it clear that the charge types under both mechanisms would be included in that, charge types and revenues. And Mike, I think, can probably comment on whether we've seen the effect. One of the things we talk about in the application is anticipated efficiencies that we would see with the addition of ancillary services under the market. And I think if you're interested, Mike can talk about how it's actually operating or how it's been operating since January 6th and what we've seen from in terms of benefits to customers. But the tariff mechanism was a very simple tariff change, and we would, of course, support approval.
Thank you. If there's nothing further from the applicant at this time, we'll look towards staff.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. Regarding the questions on the agenda, I would just make one clarification. The question regarding the deferral, in order to just further clarify that, I would request that the word accounting be substituted for the word deferral. The way our fuel clause adjustment works, it takes the cost from prior months, and at the time of writing the question, I wasn't sure how far back it went. Since then, I've gone and checked, and the March 1st fuel adjustment clause would include January costs, and so there is no need technically for a deferral. However, in the filing, the company requests that we approve their accounting, which acts much like a deferral. It allows us to go back to capture costs prior to the commission making a decision. It is it's similar to a type of deferral, but the word accounting would probably be more accurate than the word actually deferral in the question. Other than that, I'm sure the commissioners probably have questions, and I do have a recommendation whether the commission would like to hear that now or. I think the commission can go ahead and allow the costs and the revenues identified in the filing to pass through to customers via the fuel adjustment clause with the understanding that a more thorough review of certain issues, such as fuel clause treatment versus rate-based treatment and appropriate cost versus revenue levels, be conducted either in a rate case or in a future fuel adjustment clause review filing. You know, this is all kind of new to us. It's we're just, you know, we don't have any historical data to review to see how this operates or what's really going to happen. So that is staff's recommendation at this time.
Maybe before we dive into questions on the content of the filing, you know, Mr. Jacobson, let's dive dealing with the first question and your amendment of that. Let's examine that a little bit more. So, you know, walk me through the process of, okay, that March fuel adjustment clause, that would generally include, you know, sort of which time frame? I mean, those would be January or February adjustments or?
Excuse me. For instance, I have here, the fuel adjustment for January takes into account the months of November and October of 2008. The March fuel adjustment clause will take into account January and December 2008, January 2009, those costs into the fuel adjustment calculation.
So if March will take into account December and January, then why the January 6th? Oh, because that's when the ASM market started.
That's correct.
Sure. It just takes me a little bit longer than other folks. Thanks. All right, other commissioner questions? I can go ahead and dive in unless you've got something ready to go.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to, could you explain that? I'm a little slower than Commissioner Johnson. We're going from January 6th to March, so the reason you want accounting and not deferral is just a kind of a...
Yes, a deferral, in my definition, refers to requesting costs be accumulated over a given time previous to their being recovered by the company.
Sure.
Without the fuel adjustment clause mechanism, which in fact reaches back in time to take into consideration costs, a deferral would have been appropriate in this case. However, since the fuel adjustment clause already approved tariff does already reach back in time to those months, then they are covered and an actual technical deferral is not required. It's the normal operation of the fuel clause will capture those costs starting January 6th.
It's essentially in all cases in every month a lagging recovery.
That's true.
Anyway, so the fact that what we're doing here isn't adjusting the lagging recovery, but rather allowing the recovery of those costs with less than 30 days notice.
That's true. And different companies lag different amounts. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Some questions for the applicant. You did note somewhat what Excel has got going on in other jurisdictions with regard to treatment of these costs. What I didn't see is the information about what maybe has gone on with other jurisdictions and other companies. Maybe an unfair question, but, you know, Mr. Bogner, Mr. Johnson, Ms. Hoyer, any idea of what other how other jurisdictions have treated these types of revenues and costs?
Mr. Chair, this is Jim Johnson. I'll take a stab at it, and if somebody else wants to join in, they can. We actually have a conference call with the North Dakota Commission tomorrow on our application, so we'll be discussing it with them. As far as other jurisdictions, I know the Iowa, when we were before the Minnesota PUC, the Interstate Power and Light talked about the fact that they had been granted fuel clause treatment in their Iowa jurisdiction, and I know that utilities in Wisconsin, although they have a little bit different fuel recovery mechanism, are allowed to include ASM charges in the calculation of their fuel and purchased energy costs, and I believe Indiana is the same. So this would be consistent with what's happening. What we're requesting, I think, is consistent with the way other commissions are treating this expense.
As far as what we've seen since January 6th, you indicated you might have some more information on that. Could you go ahead and share?
Mike, you want to cover that one?
Sure. We have been calculating or looking at the benefits associated with the market since the market started. We don't have all of the days completed yet, but the days that we have been able to analyze, we're showing an average benefit of around $20,000 to $25,000 a day in terms of overall production cost reductions for the NSP system. So the market it appears anyway that so far the market is working as it was intended. We did not see any major issues really of any kind with the launch of the market. It went very smoothly. We feel like MISO has been running the system very well. And like I said, in our own estimation, our own calculation of the benefits and the reduction in cost that we've realized as a company, which manifests itself in either these 14 charge types or the existing charge types that are already flowing through the FCA, we're seeing about that $20,000 to $25,000 a day reduction. And we will have all days up through the current day calculated here probably within the next week. And if anybody would like to see the details behind those calculations, we can certainly provide it.
So just to clarify, and I know you know the numbers we've seen since January 6th may or may not be good indicators of what we'll see in the future, but that $25,000 a day, that's for the entire Xcel service territory in Wisconsin, North Dakota, Minnesota, and South Dakota. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Have we seen, you know, there have been some instances where these new markets have been opened up, either in MISO or in other RTOs, and there's been some initial volatility of pricing. Have we seen that with MISO or maybe in other RTOs that may have implemented ASM?
Actually, if anything, we've seen a reduction in volatility. The ancillary service market really helps MISO operate the energy-only market that they've now been running for three years as well, because there's less confusion between MISO, the market operator, and each individual utility as to who's doing what, who's responsible for what, and now you have one entity that's really coordinating the procurement of all these products together. So it actually helps smooth out the performance of the market, and we've seen less volatility in prices for all of these products since the market started. As far as other markets, I think that the experience has been somewhat similar. Other RTOs have slightly different rules, and no two markets are exactly identical, but I think that the experience in general has been very similar, that layering on ancillary service procurement in a market like this helps to smooth out the performance of the market as a whole.
On page 9 of the filing, you do explain a little bit of what Xcel's done in the past with regard to, you know, having other folks essentially, okay, wholesale loads connected to the company's transmission system continue to purchase unbundled ancillary services from the company at the rate set forth in the OATT Schedule 3, Schedule 5, and Schedule 6 tariffs. Is it possible that the revenue going forward in this transparent, robust ASM market could be less than the revenue that the company was bringing in the past through charging at the rates that it had set in those tariffs?
Mr. Chair, I think it's possible. I'm not sure we know the answer to that question. But I don't. The ancillary services revenue that we collected under our tariff was not, I mean, it wasn't a huge amount of money on an annual basis. I don't know if, I was looking to Ms. Hoyer to see if she recalled what it was. We don't, the loads that we're talking about as far as that we're purchasing ancillary services under our historic OATT are maybe 4 to 5% of our total balancing authority load. Everything else is basically our native load, so which is basically our retail customers or requirements wholesale customers. So those ancillary revenues were not, you know, that was not a substantial source of revenue for the company.
Well, and I guess what I'm trying to get at is I mean, obviously a bigger market footprint brings greater efficiencies into the system. When you analyze the system, you know, taken as a whole, that doesn't mean that there won't be some buyers or some sellers that might be adversely affected. And I was just trying to get a feel for whether or not Excel would be one of those. It sounds as though even if that was the case, the dollar amount wouldn't be very big.
Yeah, I can take a shot at that. I mean, I don't know exactly what the annual recovery through rates from wholesale customers has been. I think it's somewhere in the $1 to $2 million range. Just guessing. But if you extrapolate out the benefits that we're realizing now, at least based on the first roughly 20 or 30 days of the market operation, it will exceed that amount. It will be more in tune with an $8 to $12 or $13 million range is what it's looking like right now. So the way that the market works, though, is that, you know, whereas you might in other markets for energy, you might have winners and losers, the market is designed to really benefit all participants and allocate a share of the overall reduction in cost to serve the energy needs for all load in the footprint. Through this market, that gets allocated to every participant in the market, to the extent that no utility or no participant will be any worse off than they would have prior to the market starting. There's a number of reasons for that, which we can dive into more detail if you'd like. But in this case anyway, you know, NSP and all other utilities out there in the footprint will realize a share of the overall reduction in cost that's being experienced.
You note on page 12 that the company will be able to submit bids in a manner so that its native generation resources are self-scheduled to serve the company's native load. Can you give me some idea of when that would be a good business practice?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, when you self-schedule native generation to serve some of your needs, some of your ASM needs, I mean, when would that be the case? I mean, it would seem to me that in any case, you'd sort of be held harmless if you bid in those generation resources into the energy and ASM markets. There'd be a market clearing price, and that whether you held on to it yourself or whether you just put it into the market, the company would be essentially economically the same off in either instance. What am I missing? When would you hold back an ASM resource to self-schedule?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, in a case where we simply self-scheduled and self-provided all of our own ancillary services like we did prior to the market starting, we would expect to be in a position financially that the costs incurred associated with participating that way would be identical to what they would have been if there was no market at all. And so by allowing MISO to optimize those schedules with those of all the other utilities in the footprint, we have the opportunity to derive some savings.
Well, and I understand in an ancillary services market why you wouldn't want to self-schedule. I understand the efficiencies that can be gained, but in this new regime, in this new market, under what set of scenarios would Excel say, okay, we're going to submit bids in a manner that our native generation resources are self-scheduled? When would that happen?
Well, I mean, if we saw that the market was not performing well, if we saw that there was a lot of volatility, or if we, you know, we can analyze after the fact to determine whether or not the market is giving us an optimal set of schedules. If it would have been more economic for us to produce energy when instead they asked us to carry ancillary services or vice versa, we can determine that on an after the fact basis and gauge how well the market is performing. If we see that the market, for whatever reason, is not working as it was intended, we can self-schedule or you know, use our offers to help ensure that we do get an optimal schedule. But that would be based on a reaction to several weeks or months worth of market results that indicate that something's not working quite as it should, in which case we would work with MISO to figure out what the problem is through their stakeholder process. But in the meantime, we might have to take some action to help reduce the risk to us as a utility of the market continuing to perform poorly. But what we have not seen is we haven't seen that occurring since the market started. We've seen that, in fact, MISO has been producing what does wind up being an optimal set of schedules for us for all of these products. And as a result, we are deriving the savings we should be, and we don't have to take those corrective actions at this point.
So help me understand how that volatility or maybe that poorly functioning market could adversely affect Xcel, because the way I'm looking at it, let's say you've got a resource that, you know, any co-optimization analysis would indicate, you know, is better suited to ASM rather than energy, in which case you can bid that resource in at whatever level, but the market, let's say you bid it in at 3, just an arbitrary number, and the market's not functioning well and the prices get really high, and instead of around 3, the market clearing price for that resource ends up being 10. Well, the bad news is you got to pay that 10 for that resource, but you're also getting 10 back. So isn't it a wash?
Well, I think what you're talking about is the fact that the clearing prices for regulation spinning and reserves are typically the same everywhere. So if we were self-providing, let's just say, if MISO asked us to carry enough ancillary services on our units to cover the amount that we're obligated to purchase as a load, then you're absolutely right. Essentially, what they pay us to supply at each generator would directly offset the cost through these ancillary service charge types that we incur to procure ancillary services as a load. But what happens is that the case that I'm really talking about, where the market may not function quite right and we could wind up harmed as a result, is that if MISO, for example, were to ask us on a large coal unit like Sherco, one of our largest and newest coal units on the system, if they were to ask us to fully load that unit and not back it down to carry any ancillary services at all, so they wanted as many megawatts of energy as we could produce from that resource, we could look at whether or not the revenue that we are being paid or the price we're being paid, the LMP payment, for all that energy and the margin, essentially, that we're making over and above our cost to produce the energy, the fuel cost or the incremental cost on the unit to produce it, we can measure that difference and then compare that to what we would have made through the market if they had instead asked us to back down and carry regulation or spinning reserve. And if it turns out that the margin that was made by producing energy turns out to be less than the margin that we would have made at the market clearing price for regulation or spinning, then they asked us to do the wrong thing. It would have been more profitable for the company and, as a result, generated more savings for the company and ratepayers if they had instead asked us to carry spinning reserve. And so what we're doing every day is looking at those results and making sure that in each case, for every unit, the schedule that we received resulted in the highest overall P&L, for lack of a better term, for that resource. And if it didn't, then we would have to do something to try to ensure that MISO does ask us to do what winds up being the most profitable or most cost-saving schedule.
Okay.
And that might involve self-scheduling or forcing a certain ancillary service onto a unit or looking at our offers to make sure that those are priced appropriately.
Okay, thank you, because that makes a lot more sense to me. I mean, your positive economic benefit isn't in the treatment of that resource within just an ancillary services market, but rather in a treatment in one, either in the energy market versus the ASM or vice versa.
Exactly, and that's why to separate the new charge types associated with the ancillary service market from the existing charge types in energy could create, it will create a mismatch in the overall revenues and costs that are incurred and might result in either ratepayers, receiving too much of the overall costs or shareholders essentially being stuck with too much of the overall cost. If all of these charge types are not treated together in one big bucket, because you don't know until the market clears whether or not the overall benefit from the market is going to be derived through the energy charge types or the ancillary service market charge types.
So walk me through the timeline of when those decisions are made. I mean, how much heads up is Xcel giving you before? I mean, I imagine that this co-optimization analysis was done after all resources were bid into the market. If that's the case, then they come back and they say, we want you to do X with this resource rather than Y. What window of opportunity is available for you to take a different decision and essentially revoke a bid, or do I have my timeline messed up?
No, you're right. We submit all of the information MISO needs to operate the market, you know, for both day ahead and real time. We submit those offers essentially several hours, if not days, before MISO needs that information to clear the market. And so it's through those offers that determines how they're going to clear each one of our resources for each product. And if we see, I mean, we do have the ability to see in real time, you know, every 5 minutes, whether or not we think MISO is giving us the right schedule from a real-time perspective. Now, in the day-ahead market, which is really where probably 90 to 95% of all load and all generation clears, you know, after the market, after the day-ahead market closes at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, we can then run some models to determine whether or not there was a harm or a benefit. Now, we've lost the opportunity to do anything for that day's day-ahead market, but we can then take corrective action or call up MISO and determine what we need to do to make sure that the market for tomorrow works appropriately. But it certainly in real time, every 5 minutes as those schedules are clearing, you know, we have the ability to determine whether or not we think MISO is operating our resources in the most efficient manner.
Okay.
And then we can take corrective action for the next hour, essentially, through a change to our offers if we need to.
Okay, so the analysis that you've described, I mean, it's always done on a forward-looking basis. I mean, you're never really able to change the bid you've entered in for the day-ahead market. I mean, once it's in, but you may learn information after that that'll adjust what you do on day two or day three or day four.
Exactly. Although if we do think that we were harmed, if we do think that something went wrong in the day-ahead market, for example, you know, which we don't have an opportunity to go rerun. MISO cannot go back in time and rerun an entire day-ahead market, but we can submit a settlement dispute if we catch something where we think they didn't pay us the right amount or they didn't clear the resources in the right manner or they violated some rule of their tariff. We certainly have the opportunity to submit a settlement dispute and show that they need to compensate us accordingly.
So in the energy market, you've got two types of bids coming in. You've essentially got buyers and sellers both offering bids, and it's the interplay between those bids that determine the market clearing price. ASM is different, isn't that right? In that buyers don't submit bids. I mean, MISO just goes out and fills the ASM needs at the lowest cost, and then essentially all of the load serving entities are price takers. They never submit a bid for the ASM services that they require. Is that right?
Well, you're correct that essentially the MISO sets a requirement because these are all reliability-based products. So MISO has evaluated ahead of time with the help of all the utilities that have been doing this for a number of years what the total amount of regulation or spending reserve or supplemental reserve that's required to maintain reliability is. And then every load in the footprint essentially shares in their load ratio share of the cost associated with procuring that amount of services from all of the generating resources in the footprint. So you're right, we don't get to tell MISO how much we want to buy. That's fixed based on, you know, a number for each product that has been predetermined. And once MISO at the end of any day, MISO can tally up the total amount that they had to pay to all the generating resources in the footprint that supplied the three ancillary service products, and then they essentially distribute the cost of that to all loads in the footprint on a load ratio share basis.
Sorry about that. And this is complicated ever so slightly by the fact that you're dealing with seven regions or nodes. And so is this analysis going on, I mean, seven times?
Well, yeah, I think you're speaking to the reserve zones that MISO has defined.
Yeah.
Those once again are zones that were determined based on an analysis of whether or not ancillary services would be deliverable to the whole footprint if they were carried, you know, primarily in one region versus another. So the whole purpose of the reserve zones is just to make sure that ancillary services don't all get procured in one little corner of MISO, say the eastern region of the MISO footprint in Ohio or Kentucky, which then might lead to a situation where if we had a contingency up in the western part of the footprint, MISO may not be able to deliver all that energy to NSP, for example. So reserve zones are in place to make sure that to a certain minimum level, ancillary services are distributed across the footprint so that everybody can access them if need be. But for the most part, those reserve zones don't come into play. Typically, the market by itself, just through the optimization that MISO is doing, is distributing these products across, to generating resources all across the footprint anyway. And so those minimum zonal requirements are almost always met without having to kind of force the solution. So for the most part, you don't really see those reserve zones factoring into the overall market clearing prices or allocation of costs. If that makes sense. We would only expect to really see that occur maybe, 2% of the hours. I'm just thinking off the top of my head throughout the year.
Well, I appreciate the patience of the applicant and people like, Commissioner Hansen who deal with this on a, nearly daily basis. For some of us, this is a little new. So thanks for answering some of the remedial questions. I mean, I've just got one more. It's for staff. Is it unusual that we haven't gotten a similar filing from MDU or Otter Tail?
Yeah, that crossed my mind, too, and I don't know why that is. I haven't spoken to them about it. I've heard certain things, but I wouldn't want to I don't have any evidence, quality information to share with you at this time. So.
Well, and maybe, Dave, we just should kind of touch base and ask them, if we can expect anything similar. So, okay, well, again, thank you very much. Other questions or comments by commissioners or advisors?
Hi, this is Commissioner Hansen. I'm just curious, the intent of MISO Market, of course, was to, the RTO was to provide for, to an extent, more reliable service and to help reduce some of the challenges in the region. This is somewhat off of the base of the docket. However, I'm curious if you can tell us whether or not, at least in my examination of the expenses in the past, it appears that it increased a little bit more rapidly than what we expected to from MISO, and it has significantly decreased since the startup. Do you think that this particular the results of this ASM market will in fact reduce the cost to the consumer from Xcel?
Mike, this is Jim. You want to?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't sure if that was a question to us or staff. But...
Oh, this was not to staff, no.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, we do expect that the ancillary service market will reduce the overall cost to consumers. And the purpose of the filing is to make sure that that happens, because without recovery of the ancillary service charge types, there could be situations where that wouldn't be the case because there is that mismatch of costs and revenues. But based on what we've seen so far, the benefits that we've been able to calculate so far, and just our anecdotal experience in the market to date, it looks like the market is delivering benefits. We have seen a reduction in costs, And I think as MISO continues to operate the market and field gets more comfortable with the operation of the market, we'll see further reductions in cost because they may even be able to further reduce the overall reserve requirements that they're setting for the market as a whole, which reduces the unloaded capacity we all have to carry and allows us to produce more energy off of low-cost resources. So I would expect the benefits to continue to grow.
Commissioner, this is Jim Johnson. Just so you're aware, in response to the comments from Mr. Jacobson, we fully support the idea that those kind of issues like the benefits of MISO could be considered in a future, either future rate case or a future proceeding. If and when we file the next general rate case in South Dakota, we would anticipate that we'll have a fairly thorough discussion of relative benefits of MISO and sort of some of the things that have happened over the last few years.
That would be great. I would enjoy seeing that.
Okay.
Can you tell me, is there pretty much across the board agreement as to what cost should be a part of the ASM?
This is Jim Johnson. I'm not sure I understand the question.
Such as financial transmission rights, FTRs, there's various charges there, and should those be in the ASM?
Those are being recovered through the fuel clause now as a cost or revenue associated with the day two market. Those have been treated in the fuel clause since 2005 when the original energy market started. I think one of the things we talked about in the application was making sure that auction revenue rights, which are, I believe, largely a revenue, not a cost, also get fuel clause treatment as a cost really associated with the day two market and basically an extension of the order that the commission made back in 2005.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions?
Yeah, I guess my questions were just as the ASM market performed, which they answered, and the effect on customers, which has been answered also, so I don't have anything.
You know, Mr. Jacobson, per your suggestion about some further review, I mean, I do like that. I mean, I know initially the numbers look pretty favorable to ratepayers, but I also know that, you know, we've had some indication from Excel that maybe a rate case isn't, you know, a million years away. If a rate case wasn't filed in the relatively near future, I mean, should the commission just sort of set a, you know, sort of a soft deadline where we say, well, geez, if there's not a rate case, then probably we do need to dive into these numbers in a more robust docket?
Yes, that was complicated in the remarks that I made. Not only for Excel, but any participant in the MISO ASM docket or in just the normal MISO, transactions.
It almost seems like when we talk about fuel clause adjustment reviews, you know, we're so hampered. I mean, I think it's 10 days, you know, statutorily we have, you know, to make any adjustment on that. That's not saying that you couldn't, you know, look at historical data and on a forward-looking basis change the treatment of those cost items, but 10 days, that's nothing.
And that's in the case that we find an error.
Yeah.
That doesn't include any analysis of what's appropriate or not. I agree totally.
Well, maybe Mr. Wilcox can get that changed for us one of these sessions. So, or maybe not. Other questions?
Yes, this is Greg Ristlip. I'd have a couple. And I don't know if we'd go to Mr. Bogner or Mr. Johnson. I'll let them decide. My concern is, as we move through these docs, and you mentioned other states had approved these charges, and I can't recall the states that had, but were there other changes that they made to conform the cost of service so that these costs could flow through the fuel clause? In other words, were there some elements of base rates that were changed in order to accommodate those changes?
To my recollection, no. Just to be clear, in Minnesota, it's the treatment of Schedule 16 and 17, which are administrative charges related to the MISO energy market, and now to some degree the MISO Schedule 17 is being affected by the ASM. Those are treated as a result of our 2006 base rate case. Those are treated as base rate items as opposed to fuel. That was something that the Minnesota PUC did, and we're continuing to follow that. North Dakota, the rate case that we just completed in December up there, they voted to include 16 and 17 as a fuel or a fuel clause cost. So
what do you do in Minnesota then if they're included in base rates in 2006 with the volatility from month to month of these costs? How are those accounted for? Or ultimately, how does the company either pass these through or collect these costs?
The Schedule 16 and 17 administrative charges, I mean, there's some volatility, but not a huge amount of volatility. They're not, as volatile as energy costs, or day ahead or real time energy prices might be from a day to day basis. So what we do, and Ms. Hoyer can correct me if I'm wrong, we basically allocate the system costs between NSP Minnesota and the Wisconsin company through the interchange agreement, and then the 16 and 17 costs get allocated on a monthly basis to the Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota jurisdictions. The Minnesota jurisdictional costs get pulled out of the fuel clause. The South Dakota and North Dakota 16 and 17 costs have been recovered in the fuel clause, and so there is certainly some complexity to the accounting, but we have been doing it in a way where we're recovering it either one place or the other, but not both.
Well, it just strikes me as the difference would either, possibly be accounted for as a regulatory asset if the Minnesota Commission was inclined to accept those for future rate-making purposes, or they're just lost.
Go ahead.
This is Ann Hoyer. In Minnesota, we did have a deferred accounting order between 2006 and the beginning of the test year in the current rate case that we have in Minnesota for a portion of the Schedule 16 and 17 costs. And we have requested an amortization of those deferred costs in our current rate case in Minnesota. But on a going forward basis, we are proposing to include the Schedule 16 and 17 costs and base rates. And, there will be a volatility in those costs, but we have not asked for deferred accounting for the difference between what's in base rates and what the actual costs are.
If I could, excuse me, switch gears for a second. Near the end of the filing, you mentioned ARRs. And although the filing was really entitled ASM charges, the ARRs did appear near the end, and I was a little confused by its appearance in that filing, possibly because I wasn't expecting to see anything when I reached the end. Could you explain a little better what you're doing within the filing with regard to ARRs?
Jim, do you want me to take that one?
Yeah, if you'd like, that's fine.
Yeah, the changes with ARRs that you're seeing are really part of another change that MISO made just before the ancillary service went live that has to do with the FTR process, the annual FTR allocation process that they go through. So those charge types are really all related to the FTRs that Jim spoke to previously, which have since the start of the market, all flown through the FCA. It's just that for various administrative reasons and to kind of improve the efficiency of the FTR process, they've created a few new charge types that really all relate back to the same charge types we've always been flowing through. So I think that they went into this filing as an administrative convenience because these changes all kind of took place at about the same time. But you're right in saying that they really don't have any relationship to the ancillary service market that we're talking about here.
What specific charge types, and I guess if there are 50 of them, I don't want you to go through all of them, but Could you give me some sense of what charge types you're mentioning here with regard to the change from FTRs to ARRs?
Well, for what MISO now, instead of allocating FTRs, they allocate what they call ARRs, which are very similar to FTRs, but it's just kind of a, like I said, an improvement to the process to increase the efficiency of the market. So we're talking about, I don't have the filing actually right in front of me, but there's a ARR full funding guarantee charge type, I think, in there. There's the revenue associated with ARRs that clear in the auction, the annual FTR auction. But I mean, essentially, if you look at how all of these charge types relate to one another, they all represent the same costs that were either charged or credited under the old FTR charge types. It's just that now they've kind of broken it up into more components. So they haven't really created a new market here or a new charge that we didn't have before. It's just kind of reshuffling the deck a little bit to increase the transparency, which even though it looks like they're increasing the complexity.
And how have these charges been dealt with in other states that you mentioned with regard to, you know, the ASM market?
As I said, North Dakota, they have not voted yet. We're having a meeting with them. The indications in Minnesota, where they haven't made a decision yet, is that there is support for including the ARRs in the fuel clause adjustment. And in Wisconsin, our Wisconsin company, it's treated as a cost or a revenue associated with fuel and purchased energy. And just so to be clear to the commission and the staff, we really put this in here, I think, largely to be transparent, because we hadn't been back before you to talk about the MISO day two market. And these things had evolved over the course of 3 years, and we wanted to be, you know, very clear as to what was going to be included in the fuel clause going forward, because we hadn't specifically come back and said, oh, by the way, MISO has changed their day two accounting a little bit. These charges are going through as well, and we wanted to make sure that the commission was aware of that.
Okay. I just want to voice my concern again, and I think Mr. Jacobson mentioned it. As we go further in the MISO market, it seems to me there are elements of costs that are flowing through the fuel clause that at some point have related to base rate-making treatment here in South Dakota and other states. And I'm certainly not suggesting that, you know, Xcel is intending to make a type of adjustment that would somehow cross those boundaries. On the other hand, I think there needs to be a bit of caution on our part before the commissioners approve these, that this approval should be based pending a further investigation of the fuel clause elements, which we all know become infinitely more complex over time because of MISO than what they were 15 years ago. So I just want to express some degree of caution regarding this. And again, it's not to cast any aspersions on what the company is requesting. It's just maybe a note on our part that these things really need to be examined, I think, a little more thoroughly as time goes on, simply because this market won't be getting simpler. And that's it. Thank you.
Well, that's a good point, Mr. Islov, and sort of two take-home lessons. The one for the commission, you know, let's put this on our Outlook calendar somewhere to have this pop up and remind us. And then for the company, that there would be nothing accusatory of the commission when we indicate to Xcel and others that it's time to really dive into those numbers, that it just sort of something we need to do as a course of business. Other questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, this is Jim Justin. One last thing. I just wanted to comment on Mr. Jacobson's recommendation on the change to the reference to it from deferral to accounting. We would support that, just so it's clear for the commission's record.
Thanks very much, Mr. Johnson. Other questions or comments? As far as action, I think the two items are close enough they could be taken with a single vote. Although again, I suppose it would be a little more convenient if the second was read first. Any action? I'll move. Go ahead.
I will move that in EL08-035 that the Commission approve the revisions to the fuel clause tariff rider allowing pass-through of MISO ASM charges and revenues effective March 1st, 2009. Trying to remember, do you wish to have a motion on the first one as well? You want to go ahead and pass this one first? As I recall, Mr. Jacobson recommended that we state accounting instead of deferral in the first one. Were there any other items in the in this motion I just made that should be included?
No, I think you got it perfectly. I think with that change, that'd be right.
Then I'll end with that being the motion at this time.
So we'll take the second half
first.
Do you want both or break them up into two?
If it's all right with you, I'll continue the motion then.
Sure. Okay. Great. The motion has been made. Is there any discussion on the motion? Both pieces of the puzzle. If not, we'll proceed to vote both on the revisions to the tariff rider as well as the accounting of those charges with less than 30 days notice. We'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Kolbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much to the applicant.
Thank you very much.
Got a number of announcements that we'll draw your attention to at the end of our agenda. Is there any further business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.